Welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. Tim, Michael, Mo, and the occasional guest discussing digital analytics issues of the day. Find them on Facebook at facebook.com/analytics hour and their website analyticshour.io. And now, the Digital Analytics Power Hour.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. This is episode 123. You know, to paraphrase Wanamaker, I know that half my online ad spend is fraudulent, but I just don't know which half. You know, we live in exciting times, and the marketing technology and advertising ecosystems that are our home here in the field of digital analytics, well, they have a dark underbelly, an ongoing cat and mouse game of advertisers and those that would seek to siphon off revenue without actually trading that ad for actually a human seeing it or following industry standards. Tim, you've been in this field for a long time. Have you ever run across ad fraud in your career as the quintessential analyst?
You mean today?
Just today?
It's the bane of my existence.
Well, it's a good thing we're doing a show about it. What about you, Mo? Do they even have this down in Australia?
Oh, wait till you hear my last call. It's kind of depressing.
Uh-oh. All right. Well, it seems like we're certainly affected. And so if that's the true and all of the internet was sort of like Gotham City, then our guest is Ad Fraud's Dark Knight. Dr. Augustin Fu, he's an industry recognized thought leader in digital strategy and integrated marketing and former chief digital officer of Omnicom's healthcare consultancy group. Dr. Fu has over 20 years of management consulting experience and hands-on experience in creating and optimizing marketing across traditional and digital channels. He teaches digital and integrated marketing at both Rutgers University and NYU. He completed his PhD at MIT
started
his career with McKinsey and Company, and also served as Senior Vice President Digital Strategy Lead at McCann MRM. He's also known as the ad fraud historian and is one of the industry's top experts in ad fraud today, and he is our guest. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael. Happy to be with you.
Well, it's great, and we're excited to have you. So I think to help our audience get a little better perspective of this, I'd just love to hear a little bit of your background. It sounds like you got into the space. You were a marketer. You were helping companies do marketing as a practitioner, but then you obviously caught an interest here. So I'm really curious to hear a little bit about your story.
Yeah, I kind of fell into the ad fraud research side of things because I've been a digital marketer for a very long time. And in the more recent years, since the rise of programmatic, started to see strange things in the data. Right, I always look at analytics, and as a small business owner, I have to look at analytics all day long. And with the rise of programmatic, we started seeing things like 30% click-through rates, 50% click-through rates, you know, 0% bounce rates and things like that. And so all of those were strange, right? Those don't make sense because humans are just not that interested in your damn ad. But, you know, when we see those kinds of things, and I started asking around for, like, why is this happening? Why are, you know, banner ads getting 30% click-through rates? No one could explain why. So started looking into the matter, and long story short, you know, you can now start to imagine the bots clicking on ads to make it look like somebody engaged with the ad, right? So if you have ads that have zero clicks, you know, the marketers would become suspicious and probably not spend more money there. But if you see nice, high or healthy click-through rates, you know, you would say, oh, wow, you know, it's working really well. So let me spend more money. And over the years, there's some young marketers coming out that don't have the experience to know that click-through rates on banner ads are supposed to be in the 0.1%, you know, range, and, you know, search ads in the 1% range. When you see 30% click-through rates, something's wrong with that, right? So they don't have that kind of common sense that something is strange because that's been the norm that they've been seeing. So in that sense, I kind of fell into the fraud research because we had to build some of our own tools to start collecting the data and then really kind of figure out what was going on. And as it turns out, it's basically bad guys making money off of all that ad spend that marketers are putting into digital.
Was that when you were you client side or were you at an agency when you started?
I left I left my post at Omnicom in 2012 and kind of got back into my own consulting practice. And so when I started looking at both my own data and some new clients' data, that's when I started seeing these anomalous data points in the analytics. So it was right after I was on the agency side.
Got it. That just doesn't do anything to damage my assumption that media agencies are not incentivized to actually ferret out ad fraud. So
exactly. Nor are any of the middlemen, right? So think of the ad exchanges. They make more money when there's more volume that passes through their exchange. So anything like ad fraud, right? If we discover that 50% of the volume is fraudulent, they would be making a lot less money. So some are simply looking the other way because, you know, they'll say it's not our job to look for that. It's your job as a marketer. If you want to waste the money, it's your problem, right? So they'll have that standby excuse. In other cases, you know, they know what's going on, but they're deliberately not taking any action. So all the middlemen have a motive to not only look the other way, but in some cases, you know, deliberately let it happen.
And does that even that include actually putting in tools that are like we're auto detecting ad fraud to block it, but those aren't necessarily they're not necessarily investing heavily or really scrutinizing how robust that is? I mean, I feel like I've had cases where they're like, yeah, we're checking for ad fraud and we're blocking it. It's like, yeah, but you're checking with it at like the most rudimentary level.
Yeah. Absolutely. Right. So if you ask them the next question, right? So if you ask them the question, are you checking for it? They'll all say, yes, we're checking for it. Right. And they'll say, oh, yeah, we bought this fraud detection tech to check for it. But none of them actually understand how it works or even know what to look for. Right. So when you ask them the follow on question, how the heck are you checking for it? They wouldn't know what to say. So, but unfortunately, most media agency people and most marketers don't ask that follow-on question. So then everything just goes on.
And so I understand sort of from a client perspective, but what about from an industry perspective? I mean, like how big is this problem?
If I were to tell you how big I think it is, you wouldn't believe me anyway. But should I run that by you guys?
Yeah, try me. I'm really curious now.
Okay. I have a pinned tweet on my Twitter account in case you're online right now to take a look. There was an increasing gap between humans using various digital things like the internet, like social media, and various devices like computers, laptops, smartphones, tablets, and streaming TV, everything, right? There's a dramatic divergence of the amount of digital ad spend from the amount of time spent with media. And that started in earnest in 2013. And so that entire gap, I kind of shaded in red to say that is potentially fraud. I'm not saying it is fraud, but there's been that departure from the actual human's usage, right? So according to Pew Internet, that's been tracking internet usage since the very beginning, usage of the internet, usage of anything online and anything digital plateaued about 10 years ago, right? So there's only a finite number of hours in a day, finite number of humans on Earth, and they generate a finite amount of media attention, if you will. But that doesn't support the hockey stick growth of these ad tech companies, right? And the VCs that fund them require this kind of hockey stick growth in order to justify the sky high valuations, right? And that growth is not supported by more humans using devices and spending time online, no matter how much parallel consumption you think there is, right? So in years past, in the last couple of years, you look at some of the Nielsen numbers and they say, well, people still watch on average 5 hours of TV every day. And then they also spend 8 hours on their phone and they spend another 5 hours on the internet. When you start adding all that up, it's more than 24 hours. But then they say, well, they actually watch TV while they use the phone. So we call that parallel consumption. And they just basically brush that under the rug and say, oh, yeah, we can account for the increase.
So you're completely discounting the sheer joy that people find in like navigating the internet and clicking through on banner ads and converting. I feel like
I'm even putting in there all the millennials. You know, literally, they are glued. They might as well have a third arm, you know, holding the phone in front of their faces, right? 6 inches away from their face for 24 hours a day, including when they sleep. And that even that can't account for all the trillions upon trillions of ad impressions that we're purportedly trading in digital marketing these days.
So I was off by that half number. It's way more than half.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Round number 90%.
Oh, wow.
But I'll show you a lot of the other details underlying that. You know, there's a group of publishers here in the US. Now, there's a way to differentiate that between dollars and ad impressions. In the US, just using kind of that as kind of a very mature market to look at, out of $100 billion spent in digital marketing as of 2018, roughly 10 is accounted for going to publishers that we've heard of, right? Hearst, Condé, Meredith, some of these mainstream publishers that have had publications and actual media channels, right, for many, many years. 10 billion out of 100 go to them. The other 90 go through Google and Facebook to some other place, right, that we collectively call the long tail sites. And some of these sites you've never, ever heard of, and you've never, ever seen any other human go to, right? So in terms of dollars, it's a 10-90 split. In terms of impression quantity, it's more like a 1-99 split, because those mainstream publishers that have real human audiences, you look at their growth rate over time, it barely grows by 1% year over year. Because human audiences have plateaued and you don't grow audiences significantly, right, when you're a big, huge publication like that. So those audiences are very finite and the amount of time spent doesn't change all that much, right? It's relatively constant. So the number of impressions that those mainstream publishers can generate perhaps accounts for 1% of the total impression volume that's generated in all of digital programmatic. Right, because all of these other long tail sites, they're generating 99% of the volume because it's super large quantities at super low costs. You see what I'm saying? So in that sense, they can be generating the vast majority of the impression volume. And most of those are on sites that you've never heard of and, you know, no one's ever been to.
Yeah, that's definitely more than I thought. But it makes sense, though, because that is absolutely kind of what you see in the data a lot of times, is basically what you just described. And it's always sort of like this assumption that, yeah, so those are just like, yeah, they're these, you know, websites, they're signed up through Google's program or somebody else's program. So they must have some quality standards that they're hitting, right, to be approved to be in these programs.
Yep.
But it sounds like maybe that's not really the case.
Absolutely. So, you know, you think about AppNexus, that's one well publicly documented case. So in 2015, they did a cleanup of their inventory. And basically, they took the total number of impressions from 260 billion down to 20 billion per month. That's a 92% decrease. So what ad tech company would voluntarily chop off 92% of their own impression volume unless they had to? Because otherwise they would get found out and they would go out of business, right?
Right.
So in that particular case, that was a 92% decrease, not a 9% decrease, not a 19% decrease. They chopped off 92% of their own inventory because it was so obvious that it was fraudulent. So when AppNexus first started, in their effort to grow, they let everybody in, right? Anyone could go sign up for an account, put some ad tech on their site and start running ads, right? And so that's what allowed this kind of Wild West to happen. And then similarly with Google, you know, we don't know for sure when and how strictly they enforce their policies. But we know in terms of the Google Play Store, they didn't even scan the code for malware until about 3 years ago. So in that sense, all of these apps were uploaded to the Play Store because, again, Play Store was trying to catch up to iTunes, right? So they let every app developer put stuff in there. And so they didn't even bother to scan the code for malware and other bad stuff, adware and so on and so forth, until very recently. And even when they started scanning the code for malware, the bad guys will simply, you know, get one version of the app approved and then sideload some malware and adware in it later, right? So a lot of those things, you know, bad guys are just laughing at all the efforts of supposedly the good guys in terms of, we clean up ad fraud.
Yeah.
You're not catching most of it.
So can I just ask, believe it or not, I was on holidays a couple months back and we were talking about ad fraud. I hang out with a bunch of weird people. And the one thing I think that a lot of people in the group that kind of didn't work in data and marketing couldn't understand was how do the fraudsters actually get money out of it?
Okay.
So do you mind, like for the layperson, how exactly does it get monetized?
Yes, very easy. Think about it in layers. Okay, so I'll start with probably the simplest concept that most people think of. It's like the hacker that makes a botnet and things like that. So, you know, you've probably heard of the term DDoS, right? Distributed denial of service attacks. And those attacks have been happening over the years where they simply overwhelm a site with so much traffic that the site can't come up anymore, right? So there are techniques using botnets of various kinds, right? Think of a whole bunch of computers compromised with malware or laptops or now smartphones, right? There's 10 times more smartphones than there are computers. And furthermore, the smartphones are left on 24/7 as opposed to computers or laptops, which you turn off at night, right? So when you have all these smartphones that can be remotely controlled by a bot master, you can now have millions and millions of devices that do certain things, right? So it could say, go hit this one website with so much traffic that it can't come up anymore. Or you can point that traffic fire hose to a site that has ad tech on it, right? So when there's ad tech on it, it will start showing ads every time you load the web page, right? And so that's how the early bots started to make money by generating ad fraud. Right. All they had to do was cause the page to load and then all these ads would load. And think about sticking 5 ads on the page or 10 ads on the page. Or if you're really unscrupulous, 1,500 ads on the page, so on and so forth. Right. So in that sense, the bot maker maintains a bot net that gets paid for the traffic that it sends to certain sites. And then there's a next layer on top of that that's all these websites. So think about you're not a Hearst, you're not a Condé Nast or a Meredith or these major publications that have sites and magazines and, you know, so on and so forth. You just started a site and you have no traffic because no one's ever heard of your site. If you're greedy, you know, do you actually wait for the traffic to come to your site or do you start buying traffic? Because literally, if you Google buy valid traffic or buy human traffic, there are thousands and thousands of people willing to sell you traffic. Right. So those are, think of them.
Wait, are we talking about human trafficking? No, sorry.
It is related. I won't go there for now on this podcast, but it is definitely related. How do you think those porn sites are monetized? The users that go there don't pay for that.
Wow.
They're monetized via digital ads that you don't see. So there's a whole bunch of that BS going on. And think about all the piracy sites of Web 1.0, Web 2.0. They use pirated content to attract a human audience that they then monetized by doing digital advertising, right? So the humans didn't pay for the pirated music or the pirated movies. So there's some other way those sites are monetizing.
Oh, wow.
Right. But kind of tying this back to the ad fraud, those sites have no traffic. So they would just go out and buy all their traffic. And it's a very simple arbitrage, right? If you buy your traffic for $1 and you sell your ads for $2, you've just made 100% profit, right? A pure profit. So just, and there's many, many variations. Sometimes you buy the traffic for $1, you can sell your ads for $10. Now you've made a 9x markup, right? So some of my studies in that 2018 Q2 ad fraud deck, you can see 25x return, 42x return, right? That's not 42%. That's 4,200% return for every dollar you spent in digital ad fraud. So why wouldn't you spend the next dollar to then make $42, right? So it's a highly lucrative thing. And so just to complete the picture, the bot makers will make the bots and they will say, whoever wants traffic, just buy X amount of traffic from me for a certain CPM. Then there's all these traffic brokers in between that basically buy and resell, right? So they buy low and sell high. It's very simple arbitrage. And then there's these fake websites that have no traffic. They have to buy all of that. And when they buy the traffic, they have inventory, right? So now they'll know every month I'm going to have this many ad impressions to sell into the exchanges, right? And so the exchanges love them because they provide the inventory that all their customers buy. And so the media agencies go out and buy from these exchanges in large quantities, and the marketers pay the media agencies the media budgets to go spend. So the marketers and the media agencies are not paying the bot masters directly. They're just paying to the exchanges, and the exchanges are benefiting from all of these fake sites that generate enormous volumes that the exchange also makes money from, because they get a cut of every media dollar that's spent on their exchange.
So now it is kind of the infuriating part for me, that one of those layers being the, so there are some overt bad actors who are literally saying through these layers, through just arbitrage of a marketplace, we can generate and sell stuff that's not real. But the layer of the media agencies, and there's just no way it looks good. They're either willfully sticking their heads in the sand, or they're just clueless. And maybe this goes to my, I've only relatively recently worked at an organization where we have media buying as part of our offering.
Yeah.
But historically, I was always in a case where I was just kind of furious. I would watch an agency, the media that was slowly ramping up the spend on mobile, because they were saying, hey, like, we're getting a much better rate and we've got plenty of inventory for this mobile traffic. Which, as you're talking about, I hadn't thought about the fact that phones, like, you get into that, you make a botnet out of phones, and that traffic would have, I mean, 99% bounce rate. It was a shitty, might even be a shitty site experience. And I'm looking at the traffic, and I just couldn't even get an audience because no one wanted to even acknowledge it. And I don't know if they didn't want to acknowledge it or they knew they couldn't fix it, but it's infuriating either way.
Yeah. So the agencies get paid based on the dollar spent, or even if the marketer were strong enough to negotiate that away, the media agency still makes more when more money gets spent with them, right? And so then they go out to these exchanges and say, how much inventory do you have to sell me, right? And so if they don't have enough, they'll go to the next exchange and try to get as much volume as possible, because ultimately they have to fulfill the media plan, right? The client, the marketer, tells them, go out and get me 100 billion ad impressions, right? Most real places don't have 100 billion ad impressions ready to sell. But any exchange will say, oh, don't worry, we'll get it for you, right? Now, what happens if they've contracted for that, right? They said, yes, we guarantee you we will sell you 100 billion impressions. And, you know, when 3/4 of the time period is done and they're only at half the impressions, right? If they don't fulfill that, they're going to be in breach of contract. So we've created these situations where these media agencies then desperately go out and say, who has volume? Who has inventory? I want any inventory at whatever, you know, you want to charge me, right? And so then they go out. And so all of these sites, again, they don't have the traffic, because you don't know ahead of time how many people will actually come to your site and look at web pages. That's not reliable. What is reliable is buying traffic from a botnet. You can tell it exactly, I need 100 billion ad impressions, or I need so much traffic to generate 100 billion impressions. And that is perfectly reliable. You know exactly how much you're going to pay, and you know exactly that the botnet will deliver what you paid for, right? So we've created this ecosystem where multiple parties will be in situations where if they fail to deliver, they will be in breach of contract. Therefore, they're incentivized to go out and find this fake traffic. Now, why wouldn't people know that it's fake traffic? Because we now conveniently have fraud detection tech companies whose job is not to detect the fraud, but their job is to actually tell the buyers, oh yeah, we didn't detect any IVT, so therefore everything's fine, therefore keep buying. Their job is to make everyone feel comfortable to keep buying.
I feel like they took a, so for some of the people who got fired by Moody's and Standard & Poor's kind of just moved over and said, we know how to play this game.
Yes, Exactly. It is literally everything that led up to the 2008 financial crisis. It's being played out to probably 10 to 100 times the scale in digital because it's all virtual. And there's not even any financial regulations to you know, put some boundary conditions around it.
Well, adding to your layers one more level, I've got a theory because I've witnessed it a couple of times, but you've got a much broader exposure. It seems like even when you get in-house, even if a media agency said, look, sorry, we can't get you that quality inventory. We know that you had $200,000 you wanted to spend on this audience. We don't have it. And the best thing we can do is say we didn't hit it. But then on the client side, although they should be incentivized to deliver results from the media, depending on if they're CPG or FMCG, they would have to say, oh, we didn't spend some of our budget, which is going to look bad for us at the end of our fiscal year. Yes. And it's going to hurt us. So even the marketers, the advertisers are sometimes perversely incentivized to allow junk traffic to be bought.
Yes, or to deliberately buy the junk traffic. Because if you've noticed on LinkedIn, certain CMOs or certain VPs of marketing and whatever have as their badge of honor on their LinkedIn page the amount of budget that they've been given to spend. So is their badge of honor. And they'll say, oh, yeah, well, I'm in charge of $30 million of spending in digital, right? So they will have to spend it all. If they don't spend it all, they risk losing some of it, right? They won't have as much to spend next year. So they will find every means to spend it and also find the means to make sure everything looks right. So they will buy those fraud detection reports that specifically say, there's no fraud, don't worry about it, right? So that provides them air cover so that they can continue buying that. Even if some Boy Scout showed them the data that this is all fraudulent, you know that, right? They'll say, don't tell anyone. We want to keep buying. Because if they found out that it was fraudulent, they would have less to buy. And they would actually have to redo the media plan and come up with new things to buy. And that means they have to work for it. So yes, there are many perverse incentives, even for the marketers, right? So if a marketer spent $60 million last year in digital display ads, and now we find out after the campaign is over that there was fraud, right? I'm not even talking 90% fraud or 50% fraud. If we found out that there was 10% fraud, it's still embarrassing. They don't want to tell their bosses, oh, well, I just spent $60 million last year and 10% of that's fraudulent, right? They'll do everything they can to cover that up. So ad fraud, I've said this before, ad fraud is not a tech problem. It's an incentives problem. And that goes all the way up to the marketer themselves, the parties that are spending the dollars.
So I guess I keep listening to this, one being completely terrified, but also wondering who the hell's responsibility is it then to figure out, and I don't want to say police it, but uncover it for the company and communicate that. And for God's sakes, if we say it's the analyst, I'm just going to throw my hands in the air because we've already got enough bad news to deliver.
I mean, I've been the analyst trying to deliver that. Yeah. So I feel like I've sort of lived through it, and it's exhausting because you're literally delivering some of the most objective bad news and opportunity to save money, but nobody wants to hear it.
So, you know, basically if they save that dollar would flow right to their bottom line. So think about any FMCG or, you know, consumer packaged goods company. If they spend the dollars, so say a P&G, you know, they spend $2 billion in digital marketing, right? And you saw the news last year where they cut $200 million from their $2 billion digital budget and they saw no change in business outcomes, right? If they just save that, right, and they did in that particular case, that $200 million goes straight to their bottom line. And thinking about that entire industry category, they're struggling with such low margins, right? That if you had a $200 million drop straight down to your profit line, that would significantly move your profit margins, right? Rather than spend it on digital marketing where they can't generate or document any kind of outcome. And there was a recent study I tweeted within the last week or so that there's another larger study that showed, and this was interviews, so I wouldn't put too much weight on it, but marketers, like more than half of them said digital marketing, especially programmatic display and all that kind of stuff, didn't generate any noticeable business outcomes. And that was being kind, right? It was a complete waste of money, but it, you know, they put it in the sense that it didn't generate any noticeable business outcomes. of course you didn't notice anything because it didn't do anything. So, you know, a lot of this is actually, you know, game of big numbers. Marketers love big numbers. Oh, yeah, my agency just bought me, you know, 10% more inventory at 20% lower cost. How the heck do you think they did that, right? By mixing in a bunch of low-cost inventory that they bought from crap exchanges.
But there have been some executive, like, wasn't it like last year, I think, P&G, didn't they come out and kind of at a senior executive level? And I want to say a few years ago, like Kraft, although I think, I can't remember if it was the CMO or the CEO.
Yes.
Like they're, does that work when a senior
executive? No.
No? Okay.
It's PR for themselves.
Wait, sorry. Wait, can you tell the whole story? Kind of like gave me a caption.
Yes. Basically, I give no credit to Mark Pritchard, even though he's been quoted by every single publication as the white knight, as the guy who, you know, like is bringing transparency. He has done no follow-on work and has not actually reduced ad fraud in the slightest. He doesn't even understand it. So I give zero credit to those talking heads that are there to go to Cannes and get invited to paid speaking gigs to get more PR for themselves. They have done nothing for ad fraud. And in fact, he pointed people in the wrong direction because he accidentally said, oh, you have to be TAG certified in 2016. And in 2016, TAG, which stands for Trustworthy Accountability Group, wasn't even formed completely. It was still concept stage. They had to rush to finish their documentation so that they would have something to sell people. And basically, again, all of their certifications are self-declared, right? So a bad guy will fill out some form, pay the fee, and say, I'm clean, trust me. Okay. I don't know if anyone thinks that that kind of certification works. But when Mark Pritchard said, oh, you know, all the vendors must be TAG certified, everyone had to go pay that toll. And it was a toll that was completely not worth it because the good publishers were clean to begin with, not because they were TAG certified. Right, the good publishers didn't have a big bot problem, and I can explain that separately later. But they had to pay the toll to get TAG certified, even though that didn't do anything. And TAG certification basically allowed bad guys to now operate in broad daylight because they also paid the $10,000 fee, and now everyone thought they were TAG certified. So they've got to be clean, right? So then they could sell to everybody. So in fact, it has created the exact opposite effect. It's enabled more fraud to happen as opposed to put a dent in the fraud. And so that's why I don't give credit to these talking head CMOs that don't actually understand the problem.
So what can we do about it? Like within the business, and particularly, I'm a little bit scared now. I suppose what are the solutions? Because it sounds like a lot of the tech that's being developed also kind of doesn't have a good reputation. So I guess it, internally, it's hard to communicate, but I mean, does every company now need some kind of fraud team? Is that how you combat it? Or is it?
No, you just need people like you and me, analysts who look at the analytics. And let me be more specific so it doesn't sound trivial. Basically, if you look at your own analytics, say just Google Analytics or Omniture or whatever, and you knew what to look for and where to look for it, you'd be able to find the fraud yourself without using any specialized technology. And let me use a very simple example. If you're tracking, say, traffic to your site, and a lot of the traffic, 90% of your traffic hits between midnight and 1 a.m., something's wrong with that, right? And even if it's not coming from ad fraud, that's still not optimal. Because unless there's a specific reason for your customers to come to your site between midnight and 1 a.m. and not during normal waking hours, right, normal business hours, something strange with that, right? So even if it's not fraud, it's still probably not optimal for your business. And then we see other things like 100% bounce rates or 0% bounce rates or, you know, extremely high time on site. Or things, you know, I've published some of these things over the years, but if you see 10 websites have the exact same time on site, right, meaning they send visitors that spend exactly 2 minutes and 2 seconds each, right, across all 10 referring sites, something is wrong with that. That doesn't happen naturally because humans can't coordinate their behavior to all behave in the same way. So that is indicative of something other than humans, right? So whether you want to think of that as a botnet or fraud or whatever, that's probably not something you want to keep paying for. So simple things like that. And, you know, that's what I mean by analysts, people like you and me who look at the data all day long, we can find the fraud and help the clients. And then it's really, it's a game of finding out which clients actually care to hear what we have to say.
All right. Well, we need to take a little bit of time to pay the bills. And this is our multi-touch moment. Hey, Josh, have you heard of this new tool, Faceplant Analytics?
I think I have.
It's amazing. Okay, so think about all the data that you're generating with social media. I mean, so much data and so many metrics that you've never collected before, but means so much to your business today. You know, the best part about it is it's going to analyze all that data, put it all together, and then constantly change the numbers historically so that you never know how to baseline those metrics. And of course, all the metrics are built on random indices that sound really good, but are completely undefined, like, you know, enthusiasm index and virality and virility. It's got some really great features.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I heard it has this other feature too, automated intern, where if you're losing your intern for back to school season, well, they've got you covered with the automated intern. Just feed your monthly report into their AI model and the automated intern will automatically round random digit numbers in the wrong direction.
See, I mean, that's the power of machine learning and AI today. Is there anything these guys haven't thought of? And I've heard they have a great white labeling capability for agencies. And it's only $3.99 a month.
That's amazing.
Awesome. All right. And we have another sponsor for the show. You know, we've all been asked over the years, hundreds, maybe thousands of times, what kind of bounce rate should I be getting for my website? Well, now we've got a way to answer that question. What is a good bouncerate.com? Josh, this service is amazing. It lets you just enter your website and it tells you exactly what your bounce rate should be using science and algorithms to actually figure this out. The answer is now super clear. I mean, isn't that great?
That is phenomenal.
Yeah. And I hear they're the same folks behind a couple other sites I'm sure you've heard of before too, which is like whatisagoodtimeonsite.com, what other sites have my visitors visited.com.
Who is my least popular visitor.net?
Yep, that one. And what is the exit rate for my visitors.com, I think is one of theirs too. So yeah, you definitely got to check it out. Whatisagoodbouncerate.com. It's just amazing what's happening in our industry right now. All right. Well, let's get back to the show.
So two follow-ons. So one, if we're buying media on a cost per acquisition, I assume that it's a lot harder or it's a lot more not worth it for an organization to try to, you know, botnet ad fraud around cost per acquisition.
No. Never assume. The only assumption you should make is that bad guys are trying to steal your money at all times. Okay, so that is the only assumption you should ever make. The assumption that, oh, cost per acquisition is immune, you know, that's what a lot of marketers, including the DMA, Direct Marketing Association, told me not that many years ago. They said most of their marketers believe that ad fraud doesn't affect them because they're already optimized to CPA. Mm-hmm. But let me give you a couple of examples. You've heard of affiliate fraud, right? So, yep. you know, back in 2013, the two eBay super affiliates, both of the largest eBay affiliates, super affiliates, were both committing fraud. That's how they became super affiliates, because they were cookie stuffing in order to get paid for, you know, a portion of the sales that they didn't actually earn through their hard work, right? They earned that by cheating. So both of their top super affiliates were caught cheating and, you know, fined and whatever. So the same thing happens. In this case, I use the mobile example, right? So Uber, right now referring to the second lawsuit that was recently disclosed, they're now suing the exchanges for sending them bogus app installs. So you would think a marketer like Uber, they're not paying for the impressions. They're not paying for the clicks. They're only paying when they get the install, right? That's the cost per acquisition, cost per install, cost per action, whatever you want to call that. You think that's already optimized. But if you're paying on that thing, the bots will fake that specific thing, right? So every time you get an install, the bots get paid. So now they set up fake mobile devices, install your app, get paid the $5 bounty, uninstall it, and then install it another time, get paid another $5 bounty, and keep doing that over and over again. So that's what I mean by don't assume.
Is that having to skip, like, they were, that was, it was Dentsu, one of the Dentsu.
Yeah.
So did that have to skip a couple of levels? There were unintentional bad actors in between Uber's pocketbook and the app install. Like, I'm still a little fuzzy on how the bot got to.
Yeah. So the agencies that Uber paid, you know, basically Uber told them get as many installs as possible because we just need to show growth in user numbers, right? App installed and all that kind of stuff. So there were feedback to Uber to say, this is probably not real installs. But then they said, shut up, just keep buying them, right? We just need the numbers. Okay. So Uber's not without fault themselves. But these agencies will then say, oh, well, we use Toon, right? We use all these fraud detection tech companies, and they said everything's fine, so let's keep buying, right? So then they have the next guy to kick the can down the road and say, oh, well, it's his fault. They didn't tell me it was fraudulent, right? And now from the Uber lawsuit, you can see that in the LinkedIn post that I wrote up, the significance of the second Uber lawsuit. The significance was that Uber themselves, right, their own analysts, looked at some of the reports that were given to them, and common sense told them it didn't make any sense. That's how they found the fraud. They found it themselves, even though Toon told them everything was fine. And as it turns out, the attribution company, Toon, was being tricked by the bad guys, right? So they would basically send in essentially a click, right? They would do click flooding and all that kind of stuff to claim credit for an app install. So in the case of Uber, it's simple to explain, right? If you wanted Uber, you'd probably, and you heard about it from your friend, you'd probably go to the Google Play Store and just download it and install it yourself. That's called an organic install, right? The human just installed it without clicking an ad. But what the bad guys are doing, just like the eBay super affiliates, they were stealing credit for the organic install and claiming that it was a paid install, right? Oh. They said, oh yeah, I drove that install. When, no, you didn't drive that install. It was organic. The user installed it because they wanted to, right? So when they do click flooding, all they're doing is they're sending in these fake URLs that trick the attribution provider Toon to say, oh, well, this source drove that install. Therefore, you pay them the bounty, right? So in that sense, the attribution was easily tricked. And there's also cases where, you know, you would say, oh, well, you know, bots don't buy things, right? That would be an assumption that you should not make. So in this case, bots actually don't spend the money. But what if you can actually send in an attribution URL that says this item was purchased for this amount on this date by this user? And you just send them the complete information. So that gets logged into the system that tracks your orders, right? The order didn't occur. But because the bots know exactly how to send in the right variables, they got paid the bounty anyway. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. So here's, okay, one more one that I feel like I've heard, and I kind of wonder how you respond when you get told this. So I, as a digital analyst, can find, not even at a macro level, that fraud is happening, but I can isolate traffic that is, say this specific traffic is ad fraud. I can even set up some sorts of rules to say for a short period of time, can identify fraudulent traffic. Let's optimize to the real traffic, and immediately we'll run into like, no, the magic of programmatic, your system, you're looking in Google Analytics or Adobe Analytics, that doesn't close the loop into our ad tech, which really needs pixels firing. We can't use what you, the analyst, is able to find, identify fraud, because that doesn't close the loop to our system.
Yeah, I know. They'll just make up whatever excuse. It doesn't even have to make sense, right? they will make up any excuse to then shoot you down so that the client will keep buying from them, right?
Okay.
Agency people will do this. Fraud detection companies will do this, right? We tell them, we just found a whole bunch of fraud that you didn't catch. They'll say, oh, well, it must be some anomaly on your side. Ours is right because we're MRC accredited, right? So they will find every excuse, realistic or not, to shoot you down and to protect the status quo. And the trade bodies and the standards body, the IAB, MRC, every one of those trade bodies is actually not helping the situation, because they're actually helping all the existing players protect the status quo. That's their job. It's not to actually detect fraud and find it and help you solve it.
All right. We're almost having to wrap up, but I've got another question that I think might be interesting to talk about, and that is around legality. Because we're talking about ad fraud, and certainly there's people that are inserting themselves into a process they have no part of, but what is legal and what is not legal? Like, because it seems to me like, you know, if you're a credit card company, the FBI gets involved to bust up credit card rings and stuff like that, that are like doing stuff fraudulently. But where's the legal line for people in this space?
There is none. So there is no law against ad fraud. Therefore, people operate with full impunity. They will operate in broad daylight. They don't fear getting caught. They don't fear getting called out. When one company is shut down by an exchange, they basically rename all their websites and rename the company and just keep going. So there is no law against ad fraud. And you might have heard the FBI sting at the end of 2018. They arrested 8 Russian nationals, not on ad fraud, but on computer crimes. Because in that particular case, those criminals planted malware on people's devices and used that malware to load ads in the background. So they were not arrested for ad fraud. They were arrested for computer crimes, which included, you know, intrusion, like tampering with systems and things like that.
Wait, Russians tampering with computers? That's fake news. We'll just cut this out. So we're a serious journalistic enterprise here.
Yeah.
No, see, and I think that's the point that a lot of people miss, because I think a lot of people assume this is all illegal, but it's not.
Not even close. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you'd have to interpret other laws to apply to this, right? So basically, this is a great example of an industry and technology that's far ahead of the laws, right? And so you'd have to interpret computer crimes laws to apply to some of this, right? And that's assuming the bad guys use malware to do the fraud. If you're actually making 1 million bots in an AWS, right, Amazon Web Services data center, you're a legitimate paying customer. Amazon won't even shut you down, right? You paid to use their servers, and your use case was generating some bots that went and loaded some web pages. You're a legitimate paying customer. So they want you. And, you know, they're not going to look into that. And then the other part of it would be trying to interpret wire fraud laws or mail fraud laws, right? Mail fraud would be if you wrote down something like you're going to deliver ads to humans and you didn't do that, right? That's wire fraud.
Right.
But in this case, the perpetrators are very clever. They will say, oh, yeah, we're selling you traffic. Right. And if the buyer was dumb enough to buy the traffic, they never said it was human traffic. They just said traffic. Right. You just wanted something or whatever to load your web pages. Right. And that's what you bought. So you still can't sue the bad guy.
It's always fun to get the mail fraud where, though, it'll be like a law from like 1892 where you're an IP packet is really the same as a saddlebag on the Pony Express. Yeah. And if you interpret it that way, it makes for good court arguments.
It sounds like, frankly, the best way is sort of like through maybe the IRS. Maybe there's a bunch of undeclared revenue going through this stuff or something.
There is, but it really is up to the government and attorneys generals to subpoena financial records, and then you'll actually see where the heck the money went. So conspiracy theory is that this is so lucrative, right? In the U.S., $100 billion is spent in digital. Worldwide, it's $330 billion. So with all this money, and it's $330 billion every single year, it's not just one time, right? Every single year, there's another pot of $330 billion to take from. So do you think organized crime is not taken from that pot, right? And all this money is not funding terrorism and other bad shit?
Yeah, exactly. Wow. I mean, the entrepreneurial side of me is really having a problem with like, well, I guess we should all start ad fraud. Like, it's kind of like, geez, I know how to make those URLs. I know how to, you know, send a floodlight tag with a bunch of false data in it. That would be really easy.
Announcing now the Digital Analytics Power Hour is going to shift its focus from this episode forward into a how-to site. How-to?
Well, you know, we need to wrap up, but the scale and the numbers you're talking about are obviously well beyond lucrative. And there are people that are definitely funding all kinds of crazy things. And it seems we're sitting on a pretty big societal problem, actually, that's hiding under the covers of our day-to-day internet.
Yeah. So, I mean, if we tie this to societal problems, the dollars that are being siphoned off by the bad guys, right? Whoever those bad guys are, that's facilitated by the media agencies and all the middlemen, and made automated by programmatic, right? Programmatic has just helped the bad guys automate the fraud. So they don't literally have to go take out a gun and rob a bank, right? They can sit in front of their computers from the comfort of their home and just rip off billions of dollars. It's helped them scale and automate the fraud to a point where now, you know, these dollars are being siphoned off to some other third party, right? And it's not going to legitimate publishers like some of the news organizations. So when the news organizations and these big publications are struggling to survive because they can't make enough ad revenue, right? Because these are free sites that show news and they depend on ad revenue.
Right.
And they can't make enough ad revenue, they can't pay their journalists. That's why we're now seeing a decline in news, in decline in real journalism. And that vacuum is being filled by fake news. And because no one is there to actually fact check anything, right? Now we're like relying on the community to fact check. So these things have real world societal implications, right? We are now being bombarded with a lot of fake news because there's sites like abcnew.com, mm-hmm. right? abcnew.com. And if you don't look closely, that's not abcnews.com, right? That's a fake site that's pretending to be a news site that's propagating fake news. And so all of that is the what I would call the, kind of the ripple effects that's pervading society now, the fake news phenomena that everyone's heard of. It's actually causing harm to society, right? And that would not be an overstatement that ad fraud is tied to organized crime and societal harm.
Well, on that bright note, we've got to start to wrap up. hey, everybody listening, sleep well tonight. You know, so we do need to wrap up. This is amazing. And Augustine, thank you so much for kind of coming on the show and bringing this to light. I think this kind of information is of extreme value to our listeners. So I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
One thing we love to do on the show is go around the horn and do a last call, something we've run into or we've found interesting in the last couple of weeks. Dr. Fu, you're our guest. Do you have a last call you want to share?
Yes. I think the message I want to leave with all your listeners is they can do it themselves. Solving ad fraud is not as hard as most people think. If they actually wanted to solve it, they would basically pay attention to their own analytics and don't assume that someone else took care of that for you, right? Especially if you're the marketer, get yourself trained on how to look at analytics or ask people like you and me, right, for help and look for telltale signs of fraud. And it's very simple. These things just don't make common sense, right? You should be able to pick that out from your own analytics and then take some action yourself, right? You don't need super advanced technology to detect the fraud because just know that the bad guys have more advanced technology at all times. So, you know, you should just look for telltale signs in your own analytics and you can put a big dent into ad fraud yourself.
Nice.
That's awesome. What about you, Mo? What's your last call?
It's actually on that exact same topic. So this is the third time now that I've adopted a Google Analytics premium implementation, which has just kind of been sit to left and fester and then get the really fun job of no one uses this, but we should fix it. And stupidly, this is a very gentle reminder to those out there because I didn't actually think about this until the other day. Someone was talking about which cities in the US have the highest traffic. And so I was like, oh, I'm just going to go quickly check that and just make sure that the order is correct that we were discussing. And then, of course, I saw old freaking Boardman, Oregon, which is like the bot factory from hell. And there is a very...
Yeah, it's an AWS data center.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And there's a very quick fix to filter it out of Google Analytics. And I should have checked it straight away when I started and I just didn't. And of course, I was kicking myself because it inflates the heck out of your numbers. So this is just a gentle reminder to everyone out there. If you haven't checked your analytics account by region or by city, I really recommend it.
You should probably check the exclude bots checkbox too, just as like the first cut, right?
Oh, yeah, but like, who hasn't clicked that? But
I mean, we threw it in there, so now somebody's going to be like, oh, shit, did I not?
Yeah, okay, good point. But also, I really enjoyed, Dr. Fu, your slides from the State of Digital Art Fraud in Q2 of 2018, just because it also shares a lot about the, like, you have a lot of numbers in there about how big the problem is. So if anyone wants to do a little bit more further reading, we'll share the link to those slides because they were, that presentation looked really fantastic.
All right.
Nice.
And what about you, Tim?
So I'm going to continue the progression. So we'll stick with Google and we'll stick with kind of critical thinking and our hero, Cassie Kozarkov, who wrote the Your Dataset is a Giant Inkblot Test back in middle of July. I don't know if you guys caught that on Medium. Basically, Cassie, who every time she writes something, I worship her just that much more. But it's basically a whole post that goes through, well, one, it has apophenia is like a word that she defines.
No, nobody knows what that means, Tim.
Exactly. So now they should go. It's our tendency to try to find patterns in things. So it is a delightful article that basically it hits on confirmation bias. It hits on, has lots of examples, and it's just kind of Cassie, who is running massive data science things and saying we need human beings who are critical thinking and are self-aware, and it's amazing. And then as my twofer to build on that, I'm also going to throw in something that Matthias Pittag, past guest on the show, co-organizer of the DA Hub, posted on LinkedIn. It's from a couple of years ago, but it's the site callingbullshit.org. Have you guys seen this? A couple of professors at the University of Washington who basically put together an entire class, and then they've put all their lectures and other case studies and stuff online. A lot of it is kind of around like being like data visualization and critical thinking, but it's just kind of a host of things that say, you know, don't take anything at face value, learn how to look at the numbers and call bullshit. And different kind of techniques for doing that. But the site is like a very easy thing to just poke around and kind of consume a little small video or two, or, you know, read a case study. So it's all in the same vein of lies, damned lies, and analytics. So can you continue the...
Yeah, I
will. Can you continue the theme?
I feel compelled now to just, you know, to keep going. So actually, there's been some talk on Twitter and online about this concept called dark patterns. And so that's when a company uses their own persuasive techniques to fool you into doing stuff you wouldn't normally do. So not the ads, but the websites themselves. And so there's actually a really great website that kind of lay some of this out. And there's a lot of research being done, a lot of it being led by a couple of professors at Princeton. Of course, their names are escaping me, but darkpatterns.org is a great starting place. And then there is some academic paper that was just released. We'll find a link to that as well. So be on the lookout for dark patterns. It looks like the web is back to not being a safe place. So there's one place, and I know you've probably listened to this and being like, where can we huddle for warmth and keep each other safe from all of this stuff? And the answer is the Measure Chat Slack group. That's where we all hang out. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear your reaction to the show, some questions. You can also follow Dr. Fu on Twitter at ACFOU, and he posts a lot of really great information and new research and things like that, and everything that's happening in this space on a regular basis. So a great follow on Twitter just for your own informational purposes. Dr. Fu, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a delight having you.
Thank you.
Yeah, this has been really astounding. Honestly, it's hard to sort of wrap your arms around, and then you sort of like, I think I need to go hide for the rest of the week. And just contemplate a different career, but hang in there, everybody. You know, just because there's no law against it, eventually we'll get this whole internet thing worked out. And it's just the wild, wild west right now. But yeah, we would love to hear from you. Reach out to us. Also want to throw a shout out to our producer, Josh Crowhurst, who is in no way involved with any ad fraud, he assures us. And no, I'm just kidding. And I mean, if he's not, it should be. It's free money. It's free money, Josh. What are you doing? No, I'm kidding. It is not. Anyways, so no matter how dark it gets out there, everybody, I'm sure I speak for my two co-hosts, Tim Wilson and Mo Kiss, and I tell you, keep analyzing.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to join the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Measure Slack group. We welcome your comments and questions. Visit us on the web at analyticshour.io, facebook.com/analyticshour, or at analyticshour on Twitter.
So smart guys wanted to fit in, so they made up a term called analytics. Analytics don't work.
Analytics. Oh my God. What the fuck does that even mean?
Everyone knows his Twitter account is at ACFoo. Come on.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Everybody knows that.
Just trying to help. All right.
There we go. Now I'm following you.
As am I. Great. Look at that. Blowing up your follower count just by recording.
That's right.
Okay.
Awesome.
All right. He's got 20 years, so I'm going to have to start that over. I screwed that up. Okay, quick reset. Just give myself a pause, and we'll start again.
You know, if you're talking during the pause, then it's not actually a pause.
Maybe if you would stop laughing, Tim.
You were just a scant $1 billion was Michael Helbling.
Yeah, no, I only made $100 million of ad fraud. No.
Rock flag and botnets.